Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 21st of June, Anno Domini 2014. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
21st?
The 21st.
21st, yep. Happy solstice.
Happy solstice to all of you. Longest day of the year. This show's the same length. Smartphones and tablets are playing a key role in the consumption of online videos. A new study from video technology company Ooyala shows. All the good names must be taken.
Yeah, you got to come up with a name that's not copyrighted, doesn't mean something in a weird language, and you can register the domain.
Right. That's the big one. During the first quarter of 2014, 21% of all online video plays around the world were completed through mobile devices or tablets, Ooyala reported Wednesday. In the first quarter of 2012, that figure was 3.4%. It jumped to 9% in the first quarter of 2013. So the massive growth in online video consumption via mobile devices has changed the paradigm in content availability. Since 2012, mobile and tablet video viewership is up 532%. The data bring up an important consideration for broadcasters. Over the last couple of years, several companies, including most notably Microsoft with its Xbox One, have been promoting the benefits of multi-screen viewing. Microsoft in particular believes that there's an opportunity for broadcasters to share relevant content to viewers on their mobile devices as they're viewing something on their televisions. Other companies are eyeing the way in which tablets and smartphones can be integrated into the viewing experience, though no single firm has established itself as a leader in multi-screen space. In a statement on Wednesday, Ooyala CEO Jay Fulcher said companies need to think about multi-screen viewing to build a fundamentally better video business. It might be useful for companies to also consider the devices they're targeting. Ooyala discovered that 82% of all mobile video consumption occurs on iOS devices, with nearly all of the remaining video viewing happening on Android. That's somewhat surprising considering 226 million Android devices shipped in the fourth quarter alone. Apple shipped about one quarter of that sum during the same period. I'm not that surprised, of course, because so much of the Android stuff is on Verizon, and Verizon caps data. Mobile viewing isn't reserved for those in a rush. Indeed, Ooyala discovered that 48% of people around the globe who viewed mobile videos in the first quarter watched content for 30 minutes or more. More than three-quarters of viewers watched videos at least 10 minutes in length. The statistics in our Global Video Index continue to affirm our belief that mobile is in large part the future of video and TV consumption. We see the acceleration of mobile video consumption happening globally as customers in every region adopt mobile and tablet video faster and interact with it longer. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is do you watch video on a mobile device? Your choices are all the time, once in a while, my data plan makes it too costly, and I'd rather watch on a bigger screen. Right now, 9 people have voted, and so far the winner is once in a while. It's tied with once in a while, and I'd rather watch on a bigger screen. But I know you'll have more to say. So in the forums, if you go down the right-hand side to Fascinating Stuff, you'll see a link to the forums. Inside the forums, you'll see a link to the poll discussion. And in there, you'll see one called 21 June 14. Do you regularly watch video on a mobile device? And of course, if you'd like to talk about this, particularly if you do watch video on a mobile device, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. 15.
What's interesting is that many, many shows now are using that second screen option, and they start the show by saying, you know, bring up your app on your tablet or your second screen, and then while you're watching your main show, you'll have the chat window in the second screen, or you'll have, you know, more information about the scene, or sometimes extended scenes. And it's kind of neat to see that as that second screen. And you know, that's fine in your home television, but I've started seeing some movie ads where they're going to do that in theatrical movies, too.
And, oh, hell no.
Right. Hopefully there'll be a showing where they won't do that at all, and that's when we can make sure that those of us that don't want to see all that screen, little screens light up.
Oh, my God. I will stop going to the movies.
I can't watch television without IMDb and TV.com.
Well, exactly.
Handy. But, you know, in the theater, no.
Well, the problem is I time shift almost everything I watch.
Right, yep. Well, and that's the big thing about cutting the cord, is that you have to get used to not watching things Tuesdays at 10 when it's live.
Right.
But we're already used to that.
Right. But the big thing, though, is then I can't take advantage of that second screen.
Right. Well, I keep wondering if they'll do it anyway. I haven't gotten around to trying it, but yeah. You know, when you're, because they got to know people are DVRing it too.
Right.
But yeah, you don't get advantage of the live stuff, but maybe the extra features or things, extra scenes might be there. I haven't had a chance to try that yet myself.
Right. Yeah.
I haven't either. We just got a new TV.
Congratulations.
Father's Day gift to myself.
Very nice.
Cool.
55-inch. It was $200 off. We got it for
$4.99. Don't you love it?
$4.99 for 55. Nice. And it had all my buzzwords. It was LED backlit, 1080p, 120 hertz. The 120 hertz looks like a window. Yeah. It doesn't look like a TV anymore. It's that too real. It's the same thing we ran into seeing The Hobbit at high frame rate.
Wait until you try a Blu-ray.
I did. I got the last Planet of the Apes movie we're going to watch this afternoon.
That is unbelievable.
There's new ones coming out now. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Because I bought Avatar in Blu-ray.
Yeah, I've read that's one of the best ones to get.
And then I rented it well. You know, from Netflix there, or Redbox, the regular one. So I had one going, and then I put it in, and it's like, boy, you can really see and hear a difference.
Right. If you've got a good TV and you've got good speakers, you can really take advantage of Blu-ray.
That's the biggest thing. The TV was a Westinghouse brand. Oh, they've been around a while. And the speakers are crap.
Yeah.
But I didn't intend to use the internal speakers. I've got a home theater system.
Right. No, that's right.
All the reviews said that. The speakers are crap. The speakers are crap. And the answer was plug in external stereo, like you should anyway.
Right.
That's where I love my soundbar.
Yeah, your soundbar, yeah.
All right, we should go back. We should go to the phones.
Yeah, let's try
Andy it. From Greece waiting patiently on the line. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Oh, good morning, gentlemen, or good afternoon, excuse me. The whole thing about watching video on mobile devices, it's just, I don't know, my eyes are getting old, and that those small screens are just, it's a desperation. We're crunched
Thank
for
you.
Time only.
Yep.
Otherwise, it's on the full screen TV. That's why I paid to have a big screen TV.
Yes.
And I don't want something that big to put. It won't fit in my pocket. So you know. But if I need something fast or I need something quicker, it's a fast reference kind of thing. Then you know the phone works fine. But other than that, I'll watch it on the big screen.
I found that like waiting in a line or waiting in a doctor's office. It you know pull out my iPad and I can read a book. I can watch a video. I can wait.
Right.
Wait more patiently.
Right.
It does make the wait more bearable. I'll agree with that. Reason I called today, have a Windows 7 Pro computer. Boots. I put an SSD in it. Boots really fast. It's great. 10 seconds from on to full Windows functioning. It's phenomenal. Keeping up with all my updates and everything. Well, now when I go to turn it off, there's some kind of an error message or warning message or something that flashes for a split second. I can't get it to stop long enough to read. It's there and it's gone. I can't even focus on it. It's there and gone so fast.
Yeah.
The outline looks vaguely reminiscent of the kind of things you get when you do a Windows update and it tells you, you know, it's don't turn it off and we'll do this. And you know, but it's that kind of format. But, you know, I can see the line in the little blue box at the bottom, but I can't even see what's in it. Or, you know, it's just snap and it's gone kind of thing.
All right, here's what it may be. What I would suggest you do, if you haven't done this already, make sure everything is off before you shut your system down.
All your other programs.
Close your web browser, close your email program, close whatever else may be open.
Okay.
What may be happening is that one of those is still in the process of doing something. Often what we find is our email programs are in the background receiving, sending, checking, blah, 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 blah.
When you quit mail, it may be deleting the mailbox and syncing to the server.
Or also in MS Config. You want to check in the MS Config in the startup bar.
Right.
In the startup there.
First do that, because it might be that simple.
The message may be saying something like the program mail is not responding.
It's not responding or needs to shut down properly or whatever.
Yeah, because, I mean, my normal when I'm going to get off the computer is I turn everything off, then I go down and click the shutoff. But, you know, if some of these programs, as you say, they're still doing things even though you've closed them out, so it may just be that. But it's like it's there every time I turn it off. And I run the all the malware checkers and virus scans and all that good stuff. So it's not anything that they can detect.
All right, it's just
a nuisance.
Okay, so here's what you do: do that first thing that we said, and then like Dave said, because it probably started after an update.
Okay.
And if it did in fact start after an update, then probably something you updated, like Thunderbird, if you're using that, just had a recent update that changed a couple of things. So if you can remember that it started right after an update, then there's probably little you can do about it. But you can also, as Dave said, check MS Config, check your startup folder, see what's in those things.
Do you have?
It might be different.
I mean, in XP, they used to have there was a place you could go to check alerts. Is that still there in 7?
Alerts.
Event viewer.
Yeah, it'd be like a screen that you could see. It would give you a record of any alert messages or error messages that have popped up.
Right, that's the event log viewer.
And that's under the system tools, or administrative tools.
Control panels, system and security, administrative tools, event viewer.
Okay.
We'll post that.
Yeah, we'll post that in a moment.
Do you have a video camera?
No.
How about a cell phone with a video feature? Videotape the shutdown and then frame by frame and catch what the message says.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, cool.
There's a thought.
Okay.
I like that. Okay.
Yeah, all right. Mm-hmm. I thought of that one.
Sure.
All right. One more question here, and I'm not sure you're going to have an answer on this, but have a program from friendly folks at ScanSoft called PDF Converter.
Yeah?
I bought it. They had version 4. It works perfectly fine. They came out with version 5. They wanted $100 to upgrade to it, and it didn't have any enhanced features that I really needed or wanted. 4 was working perfectly fine, so I kept it. When I built the new computer back in April, loaded all my software in, now this thing tells me it wants me to register the package. And it's when I go to the online registration screen, it's already listed as being registered. And box just keeps popping up. And
it's registered on the
old. And it won't take the already registered go away.
Yep. It's registered on the old computer, so you can't register it on the new computer.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go online, they know it's registered.
Right. So and what you may be able to do is to get hold of, if they have some human you can actually talk to, explain to them the situation.
Email.
But most of the time, their answer is just upgrade because they don't care.
Or sometimes on the old computer, you can unregister, and then on the new computer, you can register.
Right.
Well, unfortunately, that's not an option anymore. The old computer went away.
Yeah. Right.
And that's Microsoft does that. Adobe does that. A lot of companies do that now. You have to activate it on each computer, and it's tied into the hardware MAC address or the hard drive capacity. So what's happening is it thinks you stole a second copy on a second computer,
mm-hmm.
so it won't activate.
You're a pirate.
Yeah, that seems to be the default view these days by the software publishers.
Yes, Their immediate assumption is that you are a thief.
Mm-hmm. You're guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah.
And maybe not even then.
This coming from the bigger crooks on the market, huh? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what you want to do, your best bet at this point, honestly, is to, if you can get hold of somebody and check with them physically at ScanSoft, that's your best bet. Otherwise,
there's online support numbers you can call. I'll give that a shot when I've got some time to burn.
All right, we've got to take a break.
Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Jack from Brighton on the line. Welcome, Jack. What's up?
Hi. I run a standard suite of, protective software, to protect from viruses and things like that. I run AVG, Malwarebytes, anti-malware, and super anti-spyware. So far, I've been running it literally every day, all three of these suites, and it takes them a lot of time. And, of course, while I'm running it, it slows down the machine. Am I running it excessively? Could I scale it back?
Probably.
Every day to, once a week, two times a week?
Here's the thing. You should be running your antivirus constantly, but that should run in the background by itself.
Yes, that's right. It does.
The other stuff, what I tell people generally is you really should know what it feels like when your computer is running smoothly. Just like you know when your car is running smoothly. When it's starting to feel like it's not running right, that's when you take it in to get it looked at.
Or making weird noises.
But the same thing is true of your computer. It's when it's feeling sluggish or doing odd things or not seeming right, that's when you should probably run all the rest of that stuff. You don't have to run it all the time. Or if you suddenly find yourself someplace you didn't intend to be. Like, you've downloaded a new piece of software and suddenly your homepage has changed or whatever it might be. I tend to run anti-spyware things against my download directory all the time. But in general, what I'm saying is when your system is not feeling right, then run the rest of your suite.
But if you're waiting until things are not running right, isn't there a danger that you've already downloaded something that is really going to be disastrous?
Yes, that's possible. That's managing risk, right? And how risk averse are you?
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're not terribly risk averse at all. So you should probably run it fairly regularly.
Or as Nick said, if you want to run it every day, just point it to your downloads folder, because
that's just the one folder. Yeah.
That's probably where stuff is going to start from. But and then at least once a month, once a week would be better, run a full scan on the entire system.
Yeah.
Right. If you can automate that with like a little batch file,
these packages usually have a way to schedule when they're going to run. Mm-hmm. The time of day and the number of days
for them,
a week.
Right. If you can do that, maybe you have it. Do you leave your machine on all the time?
Yes, I do.
Then I tend to do what I tend to do it with mine, because I do the same. I leave it on all the time. Is I run all that stuff at 3 in the morning.
Except I'm one of those people who often works at 3 in the morning. Yeah.
Well, but what I'm saying is there's some time when you're sleeping. Have your system run that stuff during your normal sleep time.
Yeah.
That way it gets done, and you can automate that with the @ command. You can run that. You can automate how that stuff runs, and then once it's done, you can read the reports every morning, which certainly takes a whole lot less time than running it. And now you feel safer. Yeah.
And if you do have the commercial versions, the pay versions of the programs, most of them have a run in the background, watching all the time mode. That's generally what you pay for. The free versions are scan on demand. And the pay versions have a watch everything I do to prevent bad stuff from coming in.
Right. And that used to be an issue because machines were so slow. But nowadays they're so fast that it's not really an issue.
Okay. Very, very good. Thanks very much.
All right. There you go.
Bye.
Yeah, we do find that Jack is in many ways right. You need to be much, much, much more vigilant now than you used to have to be. And if you pay for that stuff, it'll run in the background. And most machines nowadays are so fast that you're not really going to notice that happening.
But you do want to have a relatively modern, fast machine, at least 4 gigs of RAM, if not 8.
Right, right. You don't want to do that with a 2 gig machine.
Yeah, you're going to have your AV running. You're going to have your anti-malware running.
Right, right. Folks, we say this all the time. Price of poker keeps going up, and it's way past the time when you should be buying a 2 gig machine, particularly if you're going to add all that stuff in with it.
Oh, heck yeah.
All right, back to our next caller, our friend Linda from Greece, New York. Hiya, Linda. What's up?
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Okay, I got a question. I got a brand new TV, but let me back up. My old TV had 3 HDMI cable things, but it also had on each one the red, green, and white cables.
Right.
Okay, now I got a new TV, and there's only one, and that goes to my...
Only one what?
Only one red, white, and green... I don't know how to say this.
Yeah, okay, I got it.
Only one section of that, where my old TV had 3 of them.
Right.
Okay, I want to be able to play... I have a Wii gaming system. Well, the one is taken up by the cable box or whatever else, and I was... Somebody told me I need an HDMI to RCA converter.
All right, two things. Go ahead, Steve.
I'll say, generally speaking, when you buy a TV, you want to make sure, before you buy it, that it has enough plug holes for everything you want to plug into it. And so your red, white, and yellow are what's called composite audio.
Okay.
So red and white is our audio, and the yellow is video, and that's generally what you plug the Wii into.
Uh-huh.
Most of the newer game consoles have an HDMI connection, which is a different connection.
Okay.
Your cable box may plug into HDMI to give you that high definition. That's what the HD is. And the Wii was one of the holdout game boxes that wasn't high definition. It was only low definition.
Yeah.
So
okay.
If you don't have enough...
I've got a 50-inch TV right here, but the composite videos, you call them,
yeah,
the 3 colors, mm-hmm, it's already taken up.
All right, so listen,
by what's plugged in there now?
Linda.
Okay, so
how many HDMI connectors?
I have four HDMI ports.
Right, but you've got an analog VCR that needs that composite jack, and you have an analog Wii that needs that composite jack, and with only one plug, then you can't plug two things in.
Your cable box should be able to do HDMI.
Your VCR is doing composite.
If you have only a VCR, do you have a VCR?
Yeah, it's a DVD VCR, and that takes up the only composite video setting that I have. My old TV had 3 of them, but the new TVs only have one.
Right, because that's an older technology,
it's older,
and nobody's
analog,
really
yeah,
using it so much anymore.
So I would say you can get an HDMI to composite adapter, but you'd be better off with a composite switch. So you plug your two composite devices, your VCR and your Wii. Well, the cheapest thing is you just plug the VCR in when you want to play it, and you plug the Wii in when you want to play it.
Right.
Well, I can't do that because it's in an entertainment center.
Yeah, in the back. It makes it harder.
Yeah.
So you can get a composite switch that allows you to switch between them. And then that has its own switch. Sometimes they call it a video distribution amplifier. So,
yeah. Well, I called Newegg. I guess it's the name of the store,
right,
the online store. You ever heard of them? Newegg?
Yeah,
they're real
big.
Okay. And they suggested the HDMI to RCA converter. I don't even know what that is. What does that do, and do I need it?
Well, that converts the HDMI signal input to your television to the RCA signals that your Wii and your VCR have. The little round connectors, the red, white, and yellow, are called RCA connectors.
Yeah, okay. So if my new HDMI has 4 HDMI ports, can I plug one of those into and run my Wii off of that?
Yes.
Okay.
Generally, they're a little more expensive than a straight RCA adapter.
But I think that's probably I probably will understand this more than I will the other thing.
You also have to be careful. You want one that's red, white, and yellow.
Red. Okay. Wait a minute. Red, white, and yellow.
That's the older composite.
Okay.
You'll find some that are red, green, and blue.
Okay. So I need. Okay.
Yeah. The red, green, and blue are component.
Okay.
You do not want component. You want
now
composite.
Now, is there a store locally where I could get those?
You might be able to find that at the electronic stores.
Goldcrest,
maybe, you know, Radio Shack when they used to be an electronic store.
Yeah, they're slowly getting away.
But Goldcrest or
maybe.
Any of the standard video stores in town. Right.
Like, would Best Buy have it?
Best Buy might have it.
Might have it.
Yeah.
Might have it. Certainly you can try there first. But, you know, any one of those places should be able to sell you what you need. If you bring them the sheet that says red, white, and yellow, and it needs to go to HDMI.
Call and ask. I mean, save yourself a trip. Call the stores and ask if they have such a thing. That way you're not wasting gas and everything else.
Okay, now, one more question, then I'll hang up. Suppose I have two things. Can I use two of those on two HDMI ports?
Yes.
Or that burn the TV out?
No, not a worry. No. The TV's designed to handle that
stuff. So as many HDMI ports I have, I can plug each one into all four of them if I had to.
Sure.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
I'm finding them on Amazon in the $18, $20 range for the HDMI to AV.
Yeah, I know.
Some of them call them AV.
But if I have a problem, I hate to spend money for shipping and all that if it's not what I want, you know?
Right. Basically, what you can buy in general, is a cable with your three plugs at one end and the HDMI at the other end.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's they're anywhere between $6 and $10.
Oh, okay. So, I had one more question, but I can't remember. What do you think? Oh, quick question. What do you think of the Samsung Galaxy S5?
I want one.
You want mine?
Yeah. Why don't you like it?
Let's put it this way. It's too much stuff. I don't even know half the stuff that's on there.
Well, that's what you're going to find with pretty much any smartphone these days, is it can do so much. You just use it for what you want and learn a little bit about what else it might do.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I got a good deal because I was upgrading at Verizon.
Yep.
But I'll tell you, Nick, that camera, 16 mega, that camera is fabulous.
Yeah, it really is. Listen, if you really want to sell it, give me a call. You probably still have my number.
No, I don't.
Oh, in that case, can you get her back and get her number?
Or email Nick at S.
Yeah, just email me. Email me at home, nick@sknick.com.
Okay, wait a minute. What is it?
Asknick.com.
I had it one time, but I lost it.
All right, send me an email. I'll see if I can find somebody to take that off your hands for you.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's one of the problems these days is if you still have analog devices like a VCR, the Wii, then you want to make sure your TV has enough analog inputs. The RCA inputs, or then when you get your digital cable box and your digital game console, you use the HDMI inputs. I used to have coax switches because that's all the TVs had, and so I had like two VCRs, the DVD player, and it was all on coax.
Yep. Yeah, it's nowadays so many of the newer devices are HDMI at both ends, the TV side and the device side. But if you've still got the old devices, trying to plug them in into a new TV, you may find you don't have enough of what you need.
Yeah.
Now, she will find that the signal is, that this, maybe the video is not quite as good as it would be if it were pure HDMI.
Yeah.
But it'll still be fine.
It works at all.
Right. It's not going to be horrible. It's just not going to be as good as the video snobs would prefer it to be. but it certainly still works, and that's the important
part. It's 480p. Right, we were talking earlier about the latest TVs are 1080p, and now we're at 2160p, the 4K. Right. The old analog television is 480 lines.
Right. All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on the solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Oh, I heard about a great add-on for Windows and for Chrome and Safari coming soon for Firefox. It's called Greenhouse. And once you install it and then restart your browser, you point it at somebody's name like Hillary Clinton, and it brings up all of her backers. And this thing was created by a 16-year-old kid.
Seriously?
Yeah, a 16-year-old kid. Some of the information, it brings it up from one of those websites that does all that. So some of the data are not up to date, mm-hmm. but that's, you know,
yeah, what
are you
going to do? A little tweaking.
Yeah, exactly. But the kid's 16 years old. 16 years old. I hate him.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Made a few bucks there, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
They're getting younger and younger.
Yeah.
I was watching the PGA Tour the other day, and they have an 11-year-old girl is doing pretty good.
Yeah.
And she's only the second youngest.
Yeah.
And a 10-year-old back in the 60s.
Wow.
All right, to the phones, our friend Jason from Altoona, PA. Welcome, Jason. What's up?
For Linda, one thing that you guys you did cover right at the end, but I was already on hold. Like you said about Amazon, you can find switches and things. I just ran into the same problem with our TV. I had the Wii, a karaoke machine for the kids, something else. I can't remember what it was. But I had three different RCA things I had to run. Got a switch for $5. And then the RCA plugs on our LCD TV, they were damaged by one of our kids. So I actually found for, I think it was like $10, a RCA to HDMI converter. That was one thing that I wanted to mention to Linda was be careful that you don't get an HDMI to RCA. Yeah. You want an RCA to HDMI.
It has to be the right direction.
Yeah.
So it's right. Composite and HDMI out.
Right. And the reason for that is because you're going from the analog to the digital. You can't, they won't work. The circuitry inside the box won't work in the reverse direction.
Yeah, it's not bidirectional. So you'll find both types of adapters.
Mm-hmm.
You got to make sure you get the right one.
Yep.
Right, exactly.
And one other thing, they do make a cable for the Wii. It's an aftermarket third-party cable, but it will take it from the standard Wii plug directly to an HDMI cord.
Well, that's good. Nice, too.
Let's find that.
That's a nice idea as well. But in general, what Linda has to do is buy cables that fit into one of her devices at one end and goes to HDMI at the other end. So it'll plug into the...
She said she didn't... She's only got one HDMI...
RCA for HDMI.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'd say, because that's usually the norm, is they're putting more HDMI on everything.
And you'll sometimes find a VGA also for a computer, and it might be easier to find VGA to or RCA to VGA than RCA to HDMI.
Right, and there's one... She only has one of those, but she only has one Wii, so she could plug the Wii into that. Yeah.
Hey, Nick, you guys into sci-fi at all?
Just a tiny little bit.
Okay. There's a book series out there by an author called... What was that?
That's an understatement Jason.
That was a slight understatement.
There's a series out there by Ian Douglas. It's a pen name, but it's three-book trilogies. It's all one big encompassing story.
Yeah.
But it starts out in roughly 2040... And it goes through 4,000-something, and it does solve the question of where is everybody, if you've ever heard of Fermi's Paradox.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's one heck of a good book, but it's, like I said, it's 9 books total. But it will just draw you in once you get past the first one, which is more military political than sci-fi.
Pen name for William H. Keith.
What was that?
It's a pen name for William H. Keith.
What's the name of the trilogy? Not a trilogy. What's the name of the nonology?
The first trilogy is the Heritage Trilogy. It starts out with Semper Mars.
Uh huh.
The Galactic Marines series, they call it.
Okay, excellent. It sounds interesting, Jason. Thank you.
I hope you guys enjoy it. If whatever format you prefer, it's in paper, it's in digital, and it's audio on Audible. So whatever works for you guys. And Steve, I just want to say congratulations on getting your question through to Mr. Gibson.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty cool. Life After Spin Right.
Oh, yeah. We talked about that last week. That's
I don't
nice.
Think it was on the air, though.
Yeah,
it was in one of the Q&As. It was the last question on one of the Q&As.
In the Q&As, and I got mentioned. He's pronounced my name wrong, but I'm used to that.
Yeah.
On Security
Now. How do you mispronounce R-E-A?
Rhea. They try to pronounce both vowels.
Apparently, they've never seen The Crying Game.
Well, they didn't read the credits, at least.
Right.
I know. There's a famous actor, Stephen Ray. He's Scottish, and he's always the buddy of the leading man.
Yeah.
Except in V, he was third billed behind Hugo, Natalie, and then Stephen Ray, because he was the cop chasing V.
Right. Thank you. I will absolutely. I'm just finishing the Parker series.
I've been reading the Mars trilogy from Kim Stanley Robinson.
Oh, that's a great trilogy. Yeah, I read that. That's nice. I got hooked on the Parker books. Parker is a.
Parker
a
Lewis?
Thief. No. He's a thief. Donald Westlake writing as Richard Stark, a whole series of books, and I'm almost through the series. It's wonderful. And then I think I'll start with the Heritage Trilogy. Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome. And if I may, one last thing.
Yeah.
Don't take this the wrong way. It's just an observation.
Yeah.
But I've noticed the number of breaks getting a little more... numerous, and the length of the finalized podcast getting a little bit smaller. So maybe we can talk to. My mind just went blank.
Yeah.
Well, we only do 2 breaks during the whole show. We do.
Well, there's 3 breaks an hour, and they're pushing 5 minutes each because that I've noticed that when I'm.
Yeah.
I'm cutting
well, that's what we do because, yeah. I mean. We've got to have some time here.
We will note that and talk to Rob about it. Thank you.
Rob, that's the thing. Thank you. Yeah. What I was going to say is maybe we could push back the German show for an hour and get a third hour.
Yeah, that'll happen. Thanks for calling, Jason.
Yeah.
I want more of you guys. What can I,
we appreciate that. We really do. Thank you so much.
You guys have a good day.
You too, my friend. Bye-bye.
So it looks like William Keith has written some Doctor Who books, too.
Oh, nice.
And Battletech books. So he's military science fiction. Who? Buck Rogers books. In the 25th century, in the early 90s. So, wow, I'm surprised I haven't heard of this guy before. He's got lots of books out.
And he writes
he's got 4 or 5 pen names because he writes so many books on so many different topics. It was like Stephen King, where he had so many pen names because he churns out a book a month or something.
Right.
Well, and that was the joke on Castle. When the other writers, Stephen Cannell and James Patterson, are yelling at Castle because he only writes 1 book a year.
Yeah, right. All right, our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's up?
She could also try plugging the gaming gadget into the VCR's input.
There we go.
Selecting line input when she wants to play the VCR, play the game.
There you go. Thank you. I should have thought of that. I used to do that too. So the VCR probably has composite in. And then that becomes the daisy chain. So from the Wii to the VCR to the television.
That's a very good thought, Bob.
And it doesn't need any extra hardware.
That's an excellent thought.
Have fun, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Yep.
It's an excellent thought. There are ways around it. You just have to know what's in the back of your devices is how that works.
And when you run out of plug holes, that's when you need a new device.
That's right. My wife and I are always yelling at our favorite authors. Obviously not in person. Just yelling at them to write faster.
Yeah.
Wishful thinking.
Well, that's why you want to wait till the end of the trilogy before you start the first book.
Well, I'm a big fan of the Dresden books by Jim Butcher.
I actually met him, and we could yell at him. No,
we could yell at him now, but he seems to be wanting to write this Codex series as well. And I keep saying you're wasting time. It's a good series. I like that series too, but it's not Dresden. Yeah.
Somebody was saying as far as trilogies, they were going to actually finish the Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah, they're filming now. Number 7 now.
Han Solo. Harrison Ford fell and broke a foot or a leg or something.
Foot.
Like. No, he broke his foot because of course the theatrical good luck is break a leg.
Right.
So
he broke his foot, so he's out for 8 weeks and blah blah blah. But filming is still going on, and all the original cast members are in it. Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill and Han Solo.
Prince Leia there is definitely not looking the same as she did.
She actually said in an interview, Steven Spielberg rehired me except for 35 pounds of me.
Yeah.
I had to lose 35 pounds to take on the role.
Yeah.
And she did. She did.
There was a cast photo that got leaked. Leaked by Lucas.
Leaked by Lucas. Yeah. So hardly leaked.
Duh.
You get right down to it.
Yeah.
But this Ian Douglas nonology sounds like it should be pretty good.
Did you see the Big Bang Theory that had James Earl Jones and Carrie Fisher in it?
Probably.
It was Sheldon was talking about was hanging out basically with James Earl Jones and had dinner with him and asking all the stupid questions about I heard you were a stud, everything we already know.
Yeah.
And then they went did a ring a doorbell and run away.
Yeah.
And it was Carrie Fisher's door.
Oh, yeah, I did see
that. She comes running out in her nightgown and, James, you stop doing that.
I did see that. I also watched The Blues Brothers again the other day, speaking of Carrie Fisher. So that was, I really enjoyed that.
Her big complaint in the first three movies is they kept saying, lose weight, lose weight, lose weight. And she was already really thin.
Goes back to the issue.
Yeah.
That goes back to the old days. Yeah, I was going to say, that's no different than the old days. You start to hear the stories about Shirley Temple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how they had to keep that poor little kid super thin.
Yep.
No baby fat. They didn't want any baby fat on her and everything else. And it's like, really?
Yep, yep, yep. Vera Ellen, who was a dancer from those days, was so anemic because they made her do it that she almost died. And ended up with issues on her throat. So with her neck muscles, and so in all her later movies, she's always wearing either a high collar or a choker or something that hides the problems, the scars, and everything else that are on her neck.
Oh,
so yeah, that's always been an issue. And if you actually meet those people, you see them on TV, and you think, "Holy moly, that's a sexy woman." Mm-hmm. And then you see them in person, and you think, "I need to buy that woman a sandwich."
Yeah.
Well, what is it? The camera adds 20 pounds? So even if you are thin, you don't look like it on TV?
Right, right.
That's because you've got your widescreen TV set to stretch the 4x3 picture. If everyone looks like they're really, really fat, your TV is set up wrong.
Yeah, right. And if everybody looks like they're really, 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 really thin and tall and alien looking,
and you can never see
their
heads,
you've got your TV set up.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how do you know, really?
Well, that's right.
I mean, some people could be that way.
But what they really need is they've got, they used to have in the old days a pattern that you could bring up on your television so you could set it up.
Yeah,
screen circles.
Yep.
Because CRTs.
The test patterns.
Yep.
Right.
CRTs were curved at the edge of the screen.
Right.
Because it was hard to make flat glass, and so you could always see these ellipses at the edges.
And whoever came up with the number, though, that it added 20 pounds. Why 20?
Well, because that's what they see. I mean, you see that. People are generally.
But how do they weigh? How do they physically weigh?
Because it's hard to lose.
That's what I mean. I'm being a little facetious.
Right. And they've got these new curved glass televisions, and everybody's saying they're junk, they're crap, because if you sit anywhere but straight in the middle, you can't see them.
Yeah.
So you can't watch television with anybody.
And the content isn't designed for curved screens.
Right.
Because even though a lot of movie screens are curved, when they release it on video, it's flat.
Right.
Because they know you have a flat television. So, right. So now we got to buy all those stupid box sets again with the curved. so it's going to be 4K.
Or not buy a curved television. Yeah. There's a thought. All right, listen. Basically, we're just you've wasted an entire hour of your life, and you know you have, and that's okay. We're not judging because we did too, and we're going to do it all over again. So if you just wait a few minutes, we'll be back with a second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Give us a call, 966-5299 or 800-790-0415. You can talk to Dave Enright, to Steve Ray, to me, Nick Francesco, and we'll be back with you and with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and solely
member-supported
Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It is Soundbites on member-supported Jazz.
And our anniversary is coming up very fast.
September.
Yeah, I mean, that's only 25 years. 2 months away.
Yep.
The summer has gone by fast. I mean, what?
Well, summer just started today.
In Rochester it was 2 weeks ago that warm couple of days.
That was our summer.
Yeah.
Get over it.
Now it's construction.
Yeah.
Yeah. The season of construction.
Or as my brother would say, just a few weeks of bad ice fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I saw the first trailer for Ice Road Truckers coming in July. Now that the ice is melted and they could edit the show together.
Right. This is it. Longest day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
After today, the days start getting shorter.
Yep. Boop.
Yep. All right.
So it was at 6:51 a.m. Eastern time this morning. So
right.
All the Wiccans and the Druids were up. And actually, I was reading about that. The Druids do go to Stonehenge.
Yep.
And have their ceremony.
As long as they don't actually touch the stones, they're allowed to be there. Democratic lawmakers will unveil a piece of bicameral legislation Tuesday that would force the Federal Communications Commission to ban fast lanes on the internet, which is just another way of saying insist on net neutrality. The proposal put forward by Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Patrick Leahy, a Democrat from Vermont, and Representative Doris Matsui, a Democrat of California, requires the FCC to use whatever authority it sees fit to make sure that internet providers don't speed up certain types of content like Netflix videos at the expense of others like YouTube or email. It wouldn't give the commission new powers, but the bill known as the Online Competition and Consumer Choice Act would give the FCC crucial political coverage to prohibit what consumers advocates say would harm startup companies and internet services by requiring them to pay extra fees to ISPs. Americans are speaking loud and clear, said Leahy, who is holding a hearing on net neutrality in Vermont this summer. They want an internet that is a platform for free expression and innovation where the best ideas and services can reach consumers based on merit rather than based on financial relationship with a broadband provider. Leahy and Mitsui's proposed ban on fast lanes would apply only to the connections between consumers and their ISPs, the part of the internet governed by the FCC's proposed net neutrality rules. The FCC's current proposal tacitly allows for the creation of a tiered internet for content companies, though the commission has asked the public whether it should ban the practice as commercially unreasonable. A free and open internet is essential for consumers, said Matsui. Our country cannot afford pay-for-play schemes that divide our internet into tiers based on who has the deepest pockets. Because the bill merely directs the FCC to rely on its current authorities, there's a limit to how effective it can be. An ongoing debate on the FCC at the FCC is whether it's legally able to ban traffic discrimination at all. Under the current proposal, the FCC would tacitly allow commercial speed agreements, but then review problematic ones on a case-by-case basis rather than lay down a blanket restriction against what it calls paid prioritization. Consumer advocates have suggested instead that the FCC reclassify broadband as a utility, a decision that would subject ISPs to greater regulation. But broadband companies, shockingly, have said that even that would not guarantee a prioritization ban survival because of the loophole in the law that allows for some traffic discrimination so long as it isn't unjust or unreasonable. The Democratic bill is another sign that net neutrality is dividing lawmakers along partisan lines. In May, Representative Bob Latta, Republican of Ohio, introduced a bill that would prevent the FCC from reclassifying broadband. A Democratic aide conceded Monday that the Leahy-Matsui bill is unlikely to attract Republican co-sponsors. People are missing the point. The point is ban paid prioritization because that'll fundamentally change how the internet works. How do you feel about paid prioritization of the internet? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I almost wish it had been worded the other way, because I can see the ISP saying, okay, we can't charge you more for fast, we'll never go fast. It should be you can't penalize companies for being slow. So everybody has to have a fast lane.
Well, but they're talking about, they're not talking about the speed of your internet connection. They're talking about how fast the data that comes over that connection is.
Some of the agreements Netflix has already been forced to pay to the ISPs.
Right. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm wonderful. I was wondering if you guys had a chance to check out Halt and Catch Fire on AMC.
I have been watching it. It's interesting. It's a fictionalized version of the birth of Compaq. The first company to successfully reverse engineer the IBM BIOS, and I haven't read that story officially before, and so I'm not sure how much it's getting right or not. But the cast of characters is pretty antagonistic to each other.
Yeah, it's a good show. Somebody put it as being the computerized Mad Men.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, dramatically, it's a very good show. I'm just not sure how accurate it is.
Right. It's entertaining, though. I was wondering, like I said, I was wondering what your take was on it, if you guys had seen it yet.
We're gonna make a computer twice as fast, cost half as much. Well, that won't work. All right, let's make a portable computer for under 15 pounds. No, that won't work either.
It's pretty cutthroat. I that's what I was curious, if it was really that cutthroat, you know, in the real story. You know?
Yeah, I didn't know anybody in Compaq back in those days.
Yeah, and they instead of being the Silicon Valley, it was Silicon Prairie.
Yeah, it's in Texas. Right. Yeah. The company is in the show is Cardiff Electronics, and they get raided by IBM for daring to make a PC.
Right.
And they lose all their mainframe work. But it's interesting because Compaq was one of the first companies, but I remember being Chips and Technologies being the company that actually did reverse engineer the BIOS.
Right.
And they made a decision like Microsoft did about, we'll license it to anyone that wants. And so Compaq had their own version, and Kpro had their own version, and TI had their own version. So that made them a lot of money that way.
And back in the day, the compatibility test was, would it run the flight simulator.
Yeah, Microsoft Flight Simulator.
That was the big thing. If it ran that, it was compatible enough. Although most businesses, now what's interesting is IBM's PCs were being sold into businesses. Apple was out there first, but many people did not buy Apple because what the hell is that? It's some little home toy machine. Then IBM came out with a machine and people said, oh, IBM. Yeah, we could bring those in.
IBM had this giant sales force already in place selling mainframes. And that became the slogan at the time was, you never go, what is it?
Nobody ever went broke buying IBM.
And since you have an IBM mainframe in your basement, you might as well put IBM PCs
nobody
on your desktop.
Nobody ever got fired buying IBM. That was it.
Yeah. you might as well put IBM PCs in your desktop.
Right, because IBM would guarantee they worked. And yep. if they didn't, most large, very large companies like banks had a room specifically set aside for IBM technicians. I used to work at a bank, and they had a room where IBM technicians sat 24/7. I mean, not the same four guys, but a couple of guys would sit in that room all day, all night. If the mainframe went down, they went into business fixing it. There were people yep. on site to do that
immediately, because your bank couldn't lose their computer.
Right, and so that IBM in the beginning said, "Yeah, these people will take care of the PCs too." Then that went away real fast when every time somebody couldn't figure out a formula in Lotus 1-2-3, they came to these guys. Right,
yep.
But that's how it started out, and that's how many machines got into the business. Then when somebody like Compaq came along, people said, "Well, it's not IBM." And then they would say, but we run all the same machines. We're 20 to 40% cheaper, and our machines are faster.
And that's what people ended up buying at home. And then they could borrow all the software from work and take it home.
That's exactly right.
And the three guys that founded Compaq were all from Texas Instruments. And in the show, the main guy's wife works at TI.
Right.
So, she was showing her daughter or her son how the speak and spell worked.
Yeah,
I thought that was really funny.
They took the
funny.
Speak and spell apart and reprogrammed it.
Yep.
And, before the show started, they had people who had previewed the show, to put their review on it, and the great and powerful Waz put his seal of approval on it. So I don't know what that means, but.
Yeah, well, I don't know that he ever worked at Compaq, but I bet he knew everybody who did.
Well, thank you, guys.
Yep. All right, thanks, Mark.
Have a good
one. He was at HP when he started developing the PC, and that was yep. one of the famous fights. Is that Jobs said that he told Jobs that HP had first crack at it because he worked there while he developed the computer, so sure. their intellectual property. And they said nobody needs a computer on their desk; they have a big IBM in the basement.
Right.
So yeah, go ahead, take it. But yeah, it was
a big the big thing that the head of IBM once said. There's a worldwide.
Yeah, well, the next is a cyclic. Thomas Watson Sr. back in the 30s. No one's going to need a computer. The world might need two or three computers because the Census Bureau might need one, and so they never put any effort into making mainframes. And so Univac and Sperry and Remington, they all captured the market before IBM got into it. And then like 30 years later, Tom Watson Jr. in the 70s said no one is going to want a PC because we have mainframes in the basement. And so they didn't put any effort into building a PC at first. And when they did, they didn't put much effort into the whole design process. From concept to shipping was less than a year. And they used off-the-shelf components. They bought a logic board. They bought a BIOS. They bought this. They bought that. And that was one of the reasons that made it so easy to clone, is they right. didn't put any effort into building it because no one's going to need it.
Right.
Now, the worldwide computer sales will probably be a dozen at most because no one needs a computer.
Right. Exactly. And that's why everybody else was able to make them cheaper.
Yeah. But the Halt and Catch Fire, have you heard of that before?
I heard of it. I haven't watched it.
Well, no. The term is supposed to be from the old mainframe days.
Oh, yeah.
It was a programming command where you make the computer basically start an endless loop. And I got into microcomputers first and never really programmed on mainframes much.
No, nor did I much.
So I hadn't heard of that.
I'd heard the term before.
Yeah.
But mostly as a derogatory thing, I wrote a program that executed HCF or whatever it is, Halt and Catch Fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's up?
Hi, guys. About 20, 25 minutes ago, you were talking to a guy who was really exclaiming about a science fiction book he's been reading, and you were all aware of it. The Heritage Trilogy? Was that the name of it?
Yes, the Heritage Trilogy from Ian Douglas. That's actually the first trilogy. Apparently there's three trilogies, which makes a nonology.
Okay, I need something really good to start reading on my tablet, because what I've been reading in science fiction has not been good. So with that advice, I'm going to buy the Heritage Trilogy from Amazon.
But see what you get. I have not read it myself.
Okay.
The same author has written lots of books and lots of different similar genres. He's got military science fiction, and he's written Doctor Who books, Babylon 5 books.
Ah, okay. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, bye. Thanks.
And I was going to post that and forgot, so let me post him up there.
Yeah, we'll put Ian Douglas on the
which
website.
the pen name of
William Keith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all big fans of science fiction here.
Especially the sciencey science fiction. Yeah, you can have a big fight with someone who you say that sword and sorcery is science fiction. Because it's not real, it means it's fiction.
Well, it is fiction.
And if they claim the sorcery is magic, then you're in fantasy, but if it's based in science, then
it's science fiction.
So we have these arguments in the science fiction club.
Yeah, I think what we end up with is silliness.
Yeah. A distinction without a difference.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the phrase, yeah.
All right, AT&T has begun mailing out letters to customers affected by a data breach that allowed employees of a service provider, I don't know what that means, a service provider, to access customer account information, including customers' dates of birth and social security numbers. I don't know why AT&T needs your social security number. The data were exposed in April through a system used in April, and we're now learning about it in June, through a system used to obtain unlocking codes for used AT&T phones for resale, according to the letter which has been posted by California's Office of the Attorney General. We recently determined that employees of one of our service providers violated our strict privacy and security guidelines by accessing your account without authorization between April 9th and 21st, 2014, and while doing so, would have been able to view your social security number and possibly your date of birth, quotes the letter. Additionally, while in your account, these individuals would also have been able to view your customer proprietary network information, or CPNI. CPNI data include the information usually visible on a phone bill, including call activity metadata. The employees had access to the data as part of a process for requesting codes from AT&T that are used to unlock phones from the telecom's network so that they can be activated with other mobile carrier service. The exposure may have been limited to individuals trading in older phones for upgrades, but AT&T has not revealed how many customers were affected by the breach. In an email statement sent to reporters late last week, AT&T Executive Director for Media Relations Mark Siegel announced that some customer accounts had been accessed without authorization and said, "This is completely counter to the way we require our vendors to conduct business. We have taken steps to help prevent this from happening again, notified affected customers, and reported this matter to law enforcement." The letter informed customers that AT&T had arranged 1 year of free credit monitoring through CSID, but the customers are required to enroll to receive it. AT&T also noted that it has reported the exposure of the data to federal law enforcement as required by FCC regulations. Are you with AT&T? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. While you do that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. We should talk about kill switches. By next summer, most new smartphones may no longer be quite so attractive to thieves. Microsoft and Google said Thursday that phones using their operating systems, including handsets produced by big names like Samsung, Nokia, or if you prefer Nokia and Motorola, will have a so-called kill switch that can render the devices unusable after they've been reported stolen. Apple's iPhone has had a kill switch called Activation Lock since September. My phone's had a kill switch for 2.5 years because I use a program called Lookout, but whatever. The plans for additional security measures come on the heels of new data in New York, San Francisco, and London that law enforcement officials believe supports their long-held belief that a kill switch will make smartphones less appealing to thieves, particularly those who intend to resell them on organized black markets. Comparing data in the 6 months before and after Apple released its anti-theft feature, people said iPhone robberies in San Francisco dropped 38%. In London, they fell 24%. In New York, robberies, which typically involve a threat of violence of Apple products, dropped 19%, and grand larcenies of Apple products dropped 29% in the first 5 months of 2014 compared to the same time period from 2013, according to a report from the New York City Attorney General's office, which included data from the New York City Police Department. By comparison, theft of Samsung products increased 51% in the first 5 months of 2014 compared to the same period a year ago. Samsung introduced a kill switch for its Galaxy S5 device in April, so it will be some time until its effect on theft rates can be evaluated. A kill switch is software that lets consumers lock down a phone after the device has been reported stolen. Users can reactivate the phone only with the correct password or personal identification number. This makes it difficult to sell on the black market. Some apps, such as Lookout, have provided this ability for years, so if you have a phone and really want a kill switch today, that's the way to do it. So are you worried about the safety of your phone data? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. There are also some devices, like, for example, if you connect to an exchange server for a business, most of them are set up to also allow a kill switch because now you have business data on your phone.
Yeah, which you don't want getting in other people's hands.
One of the things, though, to keep in mind is you need to have a good password on your account that activates the kill switch.
Right.
Because there have already been cases about people's accounts being hacked and their device erased for them by the bad guys.
Yes. Yes. And that, it all comes back down to the same security. You need good passwords. Mostly we don't have them, but you need them. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gerd from Victor, New York. Hiya, Gerd. What's up?
Well, I use Frontier, and I had a problem with the modem, so I called them, and the gentleman walked me through the whole process. I had to give him permission to get on my computer, which is fine, and he changed the password from what it was before to their modem, ZYXEL.
I don't want to know what it is.
It's the Zeisel modem.
Right. And what I had before was like my last name and then extended and then number two. And that keeps cropping up every single time that I open my Chromebook and says there's a problem connecting to that modem. There is no such thing.
Well,
how do I get rid of what the computer thinks is a modem that isn't?
Did they change your Wi-Fi password or your email password?
Wi-Fi password.
Yeah, so the computer is remembering the old Wi-Fi password
and still trying to connect to it.
Yeah.
How do I get rid of it?
Nick is frantically searching for how to forget the network and forget the password.
Yeah, you should be able to forget the network password.
And this only happens on my Chromebook, by the way.
That's what I'm saying. On your Chromebook, you should be able to forget the network password. Of course, I only have one listed. What you want to do is, if you click in the lower right corner where the date is and everything else, it brings up a list, and one of the things on that list is what you're connected to.
Yes.
If you click on that, it will bring you up a list that says whatever the name of the network is, connected, Wi-Fi network, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
You should see the old one on there.
Okay.
one of the things, and then you get three choices, connection, network, and proxy. On the connection tab, you will see two things. Prefer this network and automatically connect to this network. Uncheck both. If you uncheck automatically connect to this network, it will not, surprise, surprise, connect to that network anymore.
And that I found a section in the Chromebook Help where you go to settings. So it's the same sort of place. Settings, internet connection, wireless. And there's an X that you can click on the network you want it to forget.
Can you run that by me one more time?
I've posted it too. It's
posted.
You go to settings, internet connection, wireless networks, preferred networks. So you find your list of preferred networks, and you click the X to tell it to forget that network, and then it forgets the saved password. And then you reconnect to the network and type in the new password. But I would change that password again, one, so they don't know it, too, and two, so it isn't just the name of your router. It should be a more secure password than that to prevent other people from getting in.
Yeah, you really want to change that.
But that the problem there is, and then you have to change it on all your computers, all your tablets, all your phones, all anything that accesses that wireless network.
Right, right.
Okay. You gonna put something on?
It's there.
Yep.
I appreciate it, gentlemen.
All right. Sure. Thank you. Good luck.
Remind.
Sorry. That's
sorry. You got cut off.
That's the problem with changing your password is you then have to update it on all your devices.
Right.
And if you change your, even worse, if you change your email password, you have to change it in two places, the incoming and outgoing server addresses. So you got to change it on your computer twice, you change it on your phone twice, change it on your tablet twice. So that's one reason people don't like changing passwords. But you should have good separate passwords for every device.
Yeah. I have, on my network, I have actually three passwords on the modem. I have a 2.5 gigahertz mm-hmm. password, a 5 gigahertz password, and then the open network for other people actually has a password on it. So you can't get on my network, but you could if you were at my house, use wireless, but that won't get you onto any of my devices, won't get you even in the same network as any of the devices in my home.
Yeah. I was at a hospital yesterday, and we're on their Wi-Fi, and so just for grins and giggles, I did a device scan, and I was on their guest network, and I found 718 devices, everyone else's phones and tablets, but what shocked me was some of them looked like they were hospital computers, diagnostic computers of some sort. And I'm thinking, why are they on the guest network?
Maybe tablets?
And why can I see the guest network? Yeah, but if it's a doctor's tablet, they should be on the private network.
That's right.
Should be in...
I was doing port scans and couldn't connect to any of them, which is good.
Yeah.
But I shouldn't even be able to see them, should I?
Well, again,
back in the day, Apple automatically shared your device to the network.
Yeah, published that. That was in the early days. Networking two computers was very difficult.
Right.
So with Apple and even Microsoft in the early days, they would
solve that problem.
Yeah. They would publish your device to the network so you could easily share your files. Then when we figured out and that was the whole thing in the beginning. There were no bad guys. It was share everything you wanted to.
You could leave it wide open and no problem.
When the bad guys figured all that out, then we have to start locking it down. And now it's very hard to share files between your computers because the bad guys have figured out
how to do it. They exploit it like nobody's business. Planting time bombs in there and everything else. Yep. You know.
When I try to share something with my Chromebook, because I cannot connect, I don't have SCP on this machine, secure copy.
Yep.
So I can't securely copy something from one machine to another. I have to save it up to my Google Drive and then share it back down. That's okay if you're on, say, Greenlight.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're on, say, a slower DSL or cable connection, that can be ridiculously long amount of time to do something.
So it's gotten to be easier to just put it on a flash drive on one computer and move it to the other computer. Yeah.
Yep.
That's not what I wanted, the Chrome Store.
Yeah, it's...
no one has written SCP for Chrome yet?
I can't find one that I trust. I'm looking That's at true. A couple and thinking, well, I don't even know who this is.
Yeah.
There's a secure shell, which is excellent, but it doesn't give you SCP.
Should explain SPC.
SCP Secure Copy Program
encrypts the data during
right.
the copy.
There are two ways you can copy data over the internet: wide open or securely. If you've saved data to a machine somewhere that's locked down, the only way you can get to it is with some sort of secure program, SSH, secure shell, or SCP, secure copy program. Then you have to log in before, so you have to know a username and a password to copy something off it. I can use a secure shell. In fact, I'm logged into another machine right now here, but that's not for copying. That's only for viewing or doing things at the command line. If I wanted to copy something down, then you would find I would need a program like SCP, which I don't have.
I did find an SFTP client. Maybe that'll work.
If you're on the line, hold on.
Yeah, Unix was one of the first OSs. There's all of these cool tools available for Unix.
Right.
We have them on the Mac because that's based on Unix.
Right.
Most of them are in Windows also
because
they copied them.
Right.
And now we got to add them into Chrome, which is it's a separate OS.
Right. My favorite tool under Linux is a program called rsync, RSYNC. And what it lets me do is securely with encryption copy data from one. It's like X copy, only it goes over the internet. So I can copy only the newest files. So every night at 3 a.m., I rsync my documents folder over to another server, which isn't even in my house. And what that means is the first time it took forever. I was copying gigabytes of data. But now it's only whatever I've put in, whatever I've created new or changed. And so, from now on, it's only bits and pieces of things. In fact, it's so good that if I change two words in the middle of a file, it only copies those two words to the other file. Yep. So it's very fast once you've done it once. I'm also using a program called copycopy.com. It has a thing, and I actually put a thing in the forums about it because I really not in the forums on the lists at the beginning. You could find it if you search for it. I really like it, and what I like about it is you get 15 gig for free, and if you use the special code that I put in there, you get an extra 5 gig, and so do I. So once you install it,
talking about. Hacking and everything else, and one of the other scams that I just recently came across, though, and folks might find this if they're searching for homes and that on the internet, and you register with certain sites, you got to be aware, because what happens is, like I say, I know firsthand about this. An individual all of a sudden start contacting you and saying, oh yes, I got this property. And no problem. Yeah, you love to rent it to you and blah, 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 blah. And going on and on and on. And really trying to pull you in. And what they're doing, these scammers are doing, is looking for houses. People that register on these various sites looking for homes. And scammers will then go on there and look for homes that have pictures that are, the house is empty. So they sit there and try to get the folks, we'll get the keys to you and that, but send a deposit. The minute they ask for a deposit, folks, hang up, say thank you very much. No, I was born at night, not last night. Because the scam is going on, and I've talked to a few other friends of mine that are in the realty business, and evidently this is gaining quite popularity, folks. Even down in I was told by another friend down in New York City, that they'll even scam folks. They'll get a key, borrow the key for somebody, just to go see it, and they make an impression of it, And then they go ahead and have a copy made of that, and they start showing this house, rent it out. People are moving in, and the owner comes in and says, wait, what are you doing here? Well, I rented it. I got the key to it. No, I own this. This is not. And, oh, big time scam. Folks are getting
I've read about
taken
some of the
left
scammers
and right.
That have been able to sell the same house half a dozen times.
Right.
That they don't even own to begin with.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. You can give us a call, 966-5299, 800-790-0415. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. While rumors last week indicated that Apple would be launching minor updates to its iMac line, on Wednesday, Apple unveiled a new lower-cost 21.5-inch iMac starting at $1,099. Previously, the entry-level iMac started at $1,299, so they've dropped it $200. The new entry-level 21.5-inch iMac comes with a 1.4 GHz dual-core Intel i5 processor, a 500 GB hard drive, 8 GB of memory, and an Intel HD 500 graphics chip for $1,099. Customers can also choose to include a 1 TB drive, a 1 TB Fusion drive, or 256 GB of flash storage. On build-to-order options. All of Apple's other 21.5-inch and 27.5-inch iMacs are still available as well. KGI analyst Ming-Chi Kuo predicted last year and earlier this year that Apple would be launching a lower-cost iMac in 2014 to bolster sales in critical foreign markets. Apple is also rumored to be working on Retina display-equipped iMacs, as recent evidence in the OS X Yosemite developer preview suggested such models were in the works. While there is no specific release date for a Retina iMac, let me repeat that, there is no specific release date for a Retina iMac, Apple could launch the new desktop computer later this year. Apple's new entry-level iMac is available today through Apple's various retail locations and online stores, and of course, at Apple specialist organizations around the country, and shows an availability within 24 hours. So, will this pricing tip you into buying an iMac? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
We kind of wish they'd have gotten it down to the $999 magic price
point. Well, if you're going to drop some, no, I get it. It was Apple has never been the low-cost provider.
Never.
But $999 is a price point. People get $999. Yep. $1,099 is just over that threshold where you stop and think, yep, and mm-hmm, maybe say no.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of the bigger.
And does Apple need another $100? I don't think so.
Sure. Well, and what they've done to this poor machine is basically they've cut half of it apart. So it's a slow dual core processor,
right?
Instead of the faster quad core. So for $200 more, you're getting a much better machine. Wait another couple of months and save up the extra $200.
Well, and that's the issue Apple has always had. They live inside a very narrow price band.
Yep.
And consequently, if they're going to have multiple models, they don't have a lot of wiggle room.
Right.
And so something that really should be, I think, $899, but okay, $999, they set up a $1,099. In fact, that could be a $799 computer. It's got a 21-inch screen.
Well, in fact, the better deal is to get the $799 Mac Mini that has a quad i7, put a $200 monitor on it, and now you're at $999 for a better machine.
Yeah, you really are.
So we sort of see this maybe in schools. So this is the time that schools need to start buying.
Except
for the
schools
fall.
Aren't going to spend $1,000 for this. They're just, unless they absolutely, really, truly, specifically need a Mac.
Well, you fill your Mac lab with this, and you fill your PC lab with something
else. Well, that's the other thing. How big are Mac labs anymore in a lot of the schools and
art
everything?
Schools use them.
Yeah.
My daughter has a degree. I don't know if I bragged on my daughter yet.
You can.
My daughter still has a half a year to go. She has one semester left, so she didn't actually graduate. But she has. She's getting
slacker.
Well, because she double majored.
Slacker.
Only that's why I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only double. Gee, Nick, I thought you trained her better than that. Jeez.
Like I said, I'm very disappointed. A BFA in acting and directing, a BA in art history, and a minor in studio art.
That's all.
She also was inducted into Phi Beta Kappa, and very she nice. Won the Phi Beta Kappa Prize for having the highest cumulative GPA at Rockford University.
Cool. Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm very excited. But she has a Mac because that's her profession.
Mm-hmm. The artistic and
yeah, the art world.
And video. And
illustration and illustration, all that. Still,
yeah. Right. Also do spreadsheets and boring stuff. But we used to say that. Don't waste a Mac doing spreadsheets.
Right. Yeah. If she's gonna do art projects, looking at art, stuff like that. She needs that quality, and I get that. I don't have a problem with it.
We're also seeing it as the alternative to the Windows 8 touch interface that you don't know how to use.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
But she was actually kind of bothered when she was deciding what her next computer was going to be, because she had a Linux machine. She loves it.
Mm-hmm.
She loved it. But she really saw that in her profession, what people want is what people have.
Well, that's what we told folks for years. Yeah. We've been saying that since the day we came on the air. Yep. You've got to find where what your requirements are and find that system that then you can also get the support. Because we've had folks for years call us and say, should I get a Mac or PC? Well, it depends on where you work and what you're going to be doing. And who are you going to be able to go to?
Yep.
Just because you don't want to be in a PC environment and you walk in with a Mac and say, well, that's all I know.
Right.
There's not going to be the help or the support there for you.
In this particular case, what we're actually saying is you can certainly fill your Mac lab with Macs.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be better if you just had labs and one of your choices was an inexpensive enough but still high quality enough Macintosh to put in it?
Yeah.
Apple, and you know what? It's not like Apple's losing money. Apple is certainly rich enough that they're not going to care what
I
think.
Only reason I brought that up is because, unlike the old days, now Steve used to, back in the day, talk about this machine and that machine and, every other month. Now it's the iPads and the iPhones and all that. You really don't hear them talk about and, really say, we got this new system, and it's got all these features and this and this and that.
Computers in general have been on a downturn. Most people now are doing everything on their mobile device.
That's right. The top five selling computers on Amazon are Chromebooks. They don't sell as well as tablets.
Right.
But if you're the top five, and why? Because you can do everything you want to do for a couple of $100.
Yeah.
So it's only in the high-end labs that you need computers at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only in the highest-end labs that people are putting Macs. And you can buy, when you can buy two PCs for the cost of a Mac, you're not going to have a lot of Mac labs.
Yeah. We generally say that you can buy a cheaper PC, but it's hard to buy an equivalent PC cheaper. And
yes,
it's the difference. You could get two Fords or one Mercedes.
Right, and that's exactly it. If you're putting up a lab so people can go in and do spreadsheets and that stuff, you can do it with Chromebooks.
Yeah,
that's fine. But if you're gonna put up a high end lab, particularly for high end video, high end audio, whatever,
you can run Photoshop on Windows, but it's one of those non-obvious things. It just works better on a Mac.
Yes,
it was
absolutely
designed from the ground up to be a graphic interface.
But if Apple had a lower cost machine, you might see more sales. Maybe not, and they certainly don't care.
It's basically even their $599 Mini has a faster dual core processor.
Right.
So if you have your own monitor or a cheap third party monitor, You can get a Mac system for $700-$800 if you want.
Right.
And actually we're seeing
a decent one.
And a pretty decent one. Yeah. We're seeing the Mac Mini becoming part of the home theater.
Right.
That you plug it into your TV using one of those HDMI ports. Right. And then you've got web based stuff, web on your television, then Netflix and Hulu and all the others. So it's a way to turn a regular dumb TV into a smart TV.
Right.
With all that capability. And we even had to start putting together our back-to-school special at the store because we're getting people calling about it.
Right.
It's usually not till August. But the laptops now have come down dramatically. The 11-inch for $899, the 13-inch for $999. And you're getting a pretty decent computer. The MacBook Air being very, very light. Kids have so much crap in their backpacks. I couldn't believe how heavy my son's backpack is.
My daughter, we used to actually worry about curvature of the spine. Yeah. They were so heavy.
They don't have time to go to their locker. And my son's locker was on the other side of the building from where most of his classes were.
Right,
so
right.
He didn't go anyway.
But I'll tell you, if I were going to buy a setup for a kid today, an 11-inch MacBook Air, their eyes are fine.
Yeah.
An 11-inch machine is fine. You don't really need more than 128 gig for basic stuff.
For your documents and stuff, yeah.
Right. If they want to play games and put, you know, 7 or 8 high-end games on it, that's their business. Get over yourself. If they don't fit too bad, that's not why I'm buying it. And then you can add to that a tablet. You can add to that whatever, yep, you know, you want to add.
We're actually seeing a lot of people switching back to the iMac as the family computer with a big screen and the big power. Yep. And then tablets for everyone in the house as the living room computer.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because 90% of what people do as consumers, they do with
mail. I want to do mail, want to do web, want to do photos,
right,
maybe
right.
A little banking.
It's creators who need real computers.
And then we got a bunch of people buying the giant Mac Pro.
They are pretty.
Pretty, yeah.
Yeah. All right, that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. Happy solstice to everyone. Before you head out to the Jazz Festival, you tune your radio, keep your radio tuned to this station, because George is coming on to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We're done till next week. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. We'll see you back here next week with a whole lot more nonsense on the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1.